session number 11486, Rule 1.
And this is Inga Rad. I had pronounced it right.
Yeah.
Inga. Inga Rad, Rule 1. And if I could ask you first of all then, Inga, you know, about your background before the war started. I think you were born, was it 1925?
Yes, born 1925 in, as it was then, Stärkrade, Rhineland, which in fact at that time was still Preußen, so on my birth certificate I'm still a proper Prussian. My father came from Thüringen, which is now, well, it's a DDR, and my mother came from Hamburg. They met in Oberhausen, where my mother worked and my father did his practical time as an engineer in, I think, 1917 they met. Were engaged some time and then got married. It's not uncommon for people from different parts of Germany to actually live in the Ruhrgebiet. It hasn't got a sort of homogeneous population at all. People come from all parts to work there. Because at that time it was heavy industry, iron and steel and coal, of course. So my father was a professional engineer, having been to university. His family background is university educated, and he was in the works as a manager of the big manufacturing steel, not the blast furnace part, what comes afterwards, in Stärkrade. And we lived in a little house outside, which, on reflection, was extremely countrified. We had farms nearby, and still it was absolutely in the centre of heavy industry. So I think my father had walked to work, which was 3/4 of an hour each way, came home for lunch. They had 2-hour break for lunch, and had a rest, and then went back, and he reckoned he walked about 3/4 round the earth, as it were. I had an elder sister who was born in 1923, and we had as far as I remember, a very carefree youth. We lived in that first house until 1932, and then my parents moved into a bigger flat, an enormous bigger flat, into the town. We both were sent to a private school because my parents deemed it a better education. They were very keen on education. That was somewhat unusual. Most children went to the state schools, and this was a private school which was heavily subsidized by the works my father worked for. Very good education, very thorough education in early life, a lot of grammar, but I found going to school very easy and I liked it. So that was, I went to school in 1932 and carried through my school career in the ordinary way without any difficulty.
Was your family religious?
No. I would say they were not religious. They were christened and they married in church and we were christened, but they were not religious in the sense of church going. Although my father, I think, had a family background of some church going, but no, they didn't. In fact, although the German system is different from the English one, where you pay church tax, which is a percentage of your income tax, and you elect to do so or not. You state on your form which church it is going to go, and you need not do so, in which case you can't get married in church or be buried in consecrated ground, as it were. But there was no question that they would pay church tax, and they did. And so we belonged to a church, but there wasn't much church going. Not at that time, at any rate.
Been an interesting interesting time politically, of course, wouldn't it? You know, the late 20s, early 30s. But of course, I do realise you were a very small child. But were you aware of what was happening in sort of Germany itself?
Well, I suppose I wasn't aware of what was happening, generally speaking, because obviously at that age one wouldn't read a newspaper. And we didn't have a wireless. I don't know. We only had a wireless in about 1936, as far as I remember, or thereabouts. But I do remember that at some stage there were elections. Obviously, I wasn't really... I didn't know what it all meant or any of those things, but there were elections. And my parents had... a row, I suppose, for want of a better word, because I believe at that stage, this was 1932, my father had in fact voted for the National Socialist Party. Quite an open election, and he had voted, and my mother, who was very strongly anti-Hitler at all stages, could see no good at all, ever, didn't like it, and she was quite a strong personality. And I remember them having a quite a quarrel about it. And I think my mother was weeping, and my sister and I remember this. It sort of made an impression at the time, but I couldn't really say that politics affected me much more than that at that stage. One was a child, and it didn't.
Were you aware, though, of the status of the Rhineland and the sort of demilitarised nature of it?
I can't say that. I only remember my mother talked a good deal about the occupation of the Rhineland in 1923. Of course, this was before I was born. I think it was the Belgians who occupied our particular town, and she remembered that, and she remembered the soldiers being there, and they, I think, had some restrictions on what they were allowed to do. This was, after all, several years after World War I, so there were soldiers in the country. And she always tells a tale as she was heavily pregnant. This must have been with my sister. She was walking home, and they were playing football, and a ball hit her, and they were extremely apologetic about it. But that sort of, obviously, I don't know, this is just hearsay. No, I can't say that I was aware of the Rhineland being demilitarized in any way. It didn't impinge at all.
Did things change very much after 1936? You know, can you remember the events of that year?
I can remember the soldiers marching through the town. We'd moved by that time, and it was a sort of grey morning, and there were some on horseback and other people marching. It wasn't in any way threatening. One had heard about it, and Hitler made a speech, I believe. He made a lot of speeches, and one had to listen to them at school. And so one connected the two things. It wasn't threatening at all. They marched through the town. It was rather grey. And I'm quite sure also that I've seen pictures of them marching across a bridge at the big Rhine bridge. It's the Hohenzollernbrücke in Cologne. They marched across there. This was shown, I suppose, the Hohenzollernbridge is a sort of symbol of the Rhineland in part of it, going to across the river to Cologne. And I saw pictures of it. I obviously didn't see that. That's really all I memorized. I should imagine something was said at school, but it would not be true to say that I can, in fact, remember that at all.
How about the family? You know, was your father still a member of the National Socialist Party at this stage? Would you know?
Well, he had become actually a member, I think, must have been 34, 35, because pressure was exerted. That is at least how it was put, and I believe it. The occupation of Savineland, as far as I remember, was hardly mentioned. It wasn't, to us, a big thing. I think nationally, in retrospect, it was probably made into something quite big, but to us, it didn't really seem to matter much, as far as I remember. Didn't.
Did it not alter life in any way?
Not at all. No, it just was, I suppose, that there were soldiers in certain barracks or something. One never saw anything of the army in any case. So one theoretically knew it, but made no difference at all to life. But by that time, of course, there were other things happening, it seemed. There were more speeches from Hitler, and one became more aware of the dictatorship. That probably was because one was getting older, and if things anti-Hitler things were said at home or jokes were retold, one would always be warned not to mention them to anyone, so one became aware of it. But I presume it was simply getting older, and it had been like that since 33.
What was your image of Hitler then? You know, did he mean much to a small child?
No, he didn't. He was there. When one was a small child, it didn't feature at all. And as one got older, of course, one had the pictures all over the place, everywhere. So one knew what he looked like. And as we got older, and we had to listen to his speeches at school. And they were long and they were boring. But we had to sit and listen and not poke fun or read a book. That was not done. I mean, one simply wouldn't have dreamt of doing that. I once actually saw him. We had some dearly beloved aunts in Hamburg. They were extremely anti-Nazi, but they nonetheless said, this is history, and we must make an effort and must see Hitler. And this was in 37. My mother always said she couldn't bear it, so she didn't go. We were visiting, and so we actually went into Hamburg, where Hitler was with the Hungarian head of state, I think Horthy was his name, and they were christening a ship or something like that, and they drove through Hamburg, and it was all quite exciting. And in fact, one saw what fascinated me as a child, that the camera crews came through on a car and photographed the masses when Hitler wasn't there at all. That's what one actually later on saw, I think. They took photographs. And tremendous security at the side of the road. There were soldiers, or I think probably S and SR men standing in tightly, close to each other, and we were somewhere behind. We had quite a good vantage point, and it was said that the roofs had been inspected. Whether this is true, I don't know. I mean, this sort of thing they do even nowadays to non-dictators. And eventually he drove through in an open car quite slowly next to Horthy, and people cheered. And one had quite a good close look at him. And he didn't really look any different from all the pictures and all the newsreels one had seen whenever one went to the pictures, which one did, I suppose, then not that often. One could see him. So it was neither a shock nor was one elated. It was just Hitler going by. But I'm actually always pleased that my aunt insisted, because it's something that one has seen, and it's history in the making. So I'm pleased we did it.
What, would you say there was anything? No, you say that he was like his pictures, but was there something special about him?
I didn't think so, but then I was brought up in a family who didn't like him, who were anti-Hitler. So the one saw him as a threat to possibly even one's life. And I never felt that he had any magnetism. The believers, I think, felt that he had magnetism. He obviously stirred up people when he spoke. I didn't like his German, ugly German.
Was it?
Oh, very, very ugly German. Heavily accented, raucous. He, of course, always talked at the top of his voice. And he went on for a long time. 2 hours was nothing. And occasionally one had to stand for 2 hours and listen. At school we all used to sit. I suppose even then the good thing was that one didn't have the lesson that would have happened during that time. But I think quite often we would have preferred the lesson rather than the boring speech.
Did you have to make the Nazi salute?
Oh, yes. That became the rule at school, that before each lesson and after each lesson, you would have to give the Nazi salute. Now, depending on the teacher, this was perfunctory or not done. The very strict Nazis would insist that you stood to attention, and the others would hardly do it, and you'd sort of shuffle onto your seat, and it didn't happen. So in the end, it didn't happen much, actually. But it was expected, I suppose. Also, you had to give the salute when there was a public, when you were in a public place, and you had to listen to his speech as a member of the Hitler Youth, and then the national anthems, of which we had two at the time, were played. You had to hold up your hand during the anthems, both of them, which was extremely tiring, and one used to try and rest them on the shoulder of the person in front, as it were, which everybody did. It was sort of accepted practice.
I was wondering also, you know, the Nazi insignia, which now has such awful overtones. You know, at the time, you know, the swastika and the sort of SS flashes.
Yes.
How was that? Was that sort of accepted as the norm for in a child's mind? You were saying in this parade of Hitler how they lined the route.
Yes.
You know, how were they regarded, would you say, these SA and SS? I suppose it'd be SS then, wouldn't it?
Yes, I think it was probably the lining of the route. I can't recall this in detail. I think as a lot of people were required, you probably had all the services there. I think one simply accepted that the man couldn't drive completely unprotected through the town. At that particular stage, of course, one wasn't afraid because they weren't against one, as one had not an intention of killing Hitler. One wasn't afraid. One was just standing there as a girl. I don't know, was I 11 or 12? So I wasn't afraid of them. In fact, they were, of course, perfectly human to children. If you wanted to sort of come closer and looks between them, you were allowed to, and all this sort of thing. There was no fear, really, from people and children, of course, in particular. It's no necessity for fear. The swastika, das Hakenkreuz, yes, that was simply everywhere, in every stamp and on one's school certificates. I've got them, and there it still is. And in pictures, and it appeared on the flag and so on. Something you got simply accustomed to. It just appeared and it was there. And to us it wasn't threatening. To an ordinary German child, it just existed and didn't really think much about it after a while. It was part became part of life. I think the flags must have been changed, but I don't remember that because I never had anything to do with any previous flag and they were just there. I remember the two national anthems being sung, Always das Deutschland, Deutschland über alles, and then the next one was a National Socialist song they'd used during the time they came to power, Die Fahne hoch, das Horst-Wessel-Lied, which we all had to learn, and that was always, they were always sung together, as it were.
It would seem there was a fair amount of indoctrination at school and other organisations, is that right?
Yes, I think there was. At school, textbooks were changed. For instance, small things in math where you have problems of things, immersion in water, Archimedes and all this, I think we had more military things that were submerged and things like this. History, of course, was changed. I suppose they were the biggest changes. In the German teaching, certain authors weren't allowed anymore, Jewish ones, Heinrich Heine, they were forbidden. People who had them were supposed to throw the books away, but they probably put them at the back of their book cupboards and left them there. Music, of course, Mendelssohn wasn't performed after a while. I think that all came on gradually, not immediately at 33. Yes, there was that indoctrination. There must have been. And then it always depended on the balance you had from home, whether you still had the older books and whether when you discussed it at home, the other side was shown. So if you had parents who were educated and also anti-Hitler, then you were presented with the other side, and indoctrination didn't have such an effect because you always at the back of your mind realized that that wasn't acceptable and that was a lie. Pacifism was, of course, completely condemned. I remember it came up in a history lesson, and I dare to say that I thought that would be rather a good thing. Why did they have to do all this fighting? And that was then said, oh, it's pacifism, and of course that's not acceptable. That's cowardice. I mean, it was equated with cowardice, of course. Those are a few things I can remember. There must have been lots. I mean, all school books were changed. The Atlas was continually changed. Well, it was during the war, of course, with all the new areas that were conquered or occupied.
Did you ever see any of these anti-Semitic publications? You know, for instance, would they have been circulated in school?
No, they weren't circulated in school. They were publicly shown where newspapers were shown. Some places outside newspaper offices, the daily newspaper, the local daily newspaper, was always be on show. So you didn't have to buy it, you could actually look there. And then there was a particular newspaper called Der Stürmer, which was against the Jews. And that was always on show there, with all the nasty pictures of Jews. Yes, I think you couldn't escape knowing that the Jews were not wanted.
What sort of pictures would they have been? Can you remember, you know, the impression you had
up? Well, very exaggerated physical attributes, really horrible-looking people with enormous hooked noses, sort of trying to grab beautiful, pure German girls. That type of thing would be shown. And in his speeches, Hitler was always, well, always ranting and raving against the Jews and picking out foreign statesmen who were Jews. I think Horace Belisha was English, was Jewish. So he was always, I remember, he was always picked out as being particularly vicious, as it were. Yes, you see, I lived in an area, the Ruhrgebiet, heavy industry, very few Jews. The Jews weren't in industry. And so there were only literally very few Jews altogether in the town, and they had shops. So in a way, you didn't see much of it because they simply weren't there. And in those days, of course, one didn't have, obviously, no television, and wherever there were a lot of Jews, there were in other towns, I believe Frankfurt, Hamburg, one simply didn't go there that often or travel, so one didn't know what happened in those towns. But you couldn't escape knowing, even as a child.
Do you think it affected your sort of image of Jewish people at all, this propaganda?
No. Again, I was a child and I believed my parents more than I believed the propaganda. But I suppose if you didn't have the counter-reaction from home, it might well have affected you. There was no Jewish child in my class. There wasn't. There were only very few. There was one in my sister's class. She went to parties there. And that, of course, gradually stopped. They had to leave the schools. The full Jews, the half Jews could carry on. They had to leave the schools, and they were still, you weren't, to begin with, you weren't encouraged to shop in their shops. And later on, of course, they were simply taken away from them, and those particularly Jewish families disappeared. I think the parents send the children to South America. This was in our town because they were comparatively well-to-do and thought this would happen, but the parents, I think, perished somewhere. I didn't know them particularly well, but I didn't know them. And one talked to them, and I remember them wearing the yellow star.